Well, we go to Brussels now, and breaking news overnight. EU leaders have struck a deal to provide Ukraine with a 90 billion euro loan for the next 2 years. However, that deal won't involve frozen Russian assets because member states failed to reach agreement on that issue. Well, our Europe editor Tony Connolly is on the line now from Brussels. Tony, what exactly was agreed overnight?
Good morning, Cian. Well, they did agree 90 billion euro in interest-free loans for Ukraine. But as you mentioned, that's not going to touch the frozen Russian assets that had really been at the centre of this whole effort for months. And yesterday it looked like they were still aiming to use up to 210 billion euro of frozen Russian assets to provide Ukraine with a long-term financial and military support in the coming years. But clearly, Belgium was adamant that it would not sign up to anything that would potentially leave that country exposed, because the vast bulk, 185 billion euro of the Russian assets, are held in a Belgian securities depository called Euroclear. And Belgium had said that if Russia were to successfully sue for that money in the future, then the Belgian state would be on the hook. Now, there were enormous efforts throughout the day to find ways to give Belgium the comfort, the guarantees other member states would sign up to, other EU budgetary methods to cover any potential liability that Belgium would suffer in the future. And again, most people said it was highly unlikely that Russia would ever be able to successfully enforce a successful lawsuit in the European Union, because its assets remain subject to EU sanctions in pretty much in perpetuity or until it makes reparations. Nonetheless, Belgium was simply not prepared to sign up to this. And I think ultimately, because this was of huge importance, national importance to a founding member of the European Union, that other member states were simply not going to railroad Belgium in this occasion. So they opted then for the other course of action, which is borrowing on the international markets using untapped funds from the EU budget, 90 billion euro, which they'll give to Ukraine to make sure it can function for the next 2 years. They have reserved the right to keep those Russian assets frozen, and they could still come back in the future to use those assets to repay that loan that has been given to Ukraine if Russia doesn't make war preparations. But again, it's likely they're going to come up against the same problems of Belgian resistance in that scenario sometime in the future.
But that 90 billion, who will ultimately pay for it, Tony?
Well, this is the EU going to the capital markets to borrow money. Now, this was done after COVID. The EU borrowed 750 billion euro for the COVID recovery fund. That was a departure for the EU, essentially joint debt. And that means that EU member states are liable for repaying that loan through the EU budget over the years. Now, the difference this time is that Hungary, Slovakia and Czechia have opted out of that arrangement, so they're not going to be liable for any of that repayment process. But that's, again, a reflection of how Hungary and Slovakia, who are essentially pro-Russian member states now at this stage, have been able to fracture EU unity when it comes to supporting Ukraine.
How significant is this 90 billion for Ukraine?
It's absolutely vital for Ukraine. They're due to run out of money in the second quarter of next year. So this is going to meet their minimum needs for 2026 and 2027. Remember, in October, when EU leaders met, they pledged to support Ukraine financially for the next 2 years. The question was how they would do it, and they've obviously not gone down the road of the frozen Russian assets. But this means Ukraine can also tap other sources of international finance. The International Monetary Fund will now be able to lend to Ukraine on the basis of this money. Other donors, Canada, Japan, Norway, will also be making contributions to make sure Ukraine can stay afloat. And of course, this is vital not just to keep the country going economically, financially, but also in terms of morale, because they're under enormous pressure from the Trump administration to sign up to a peace agreement, which could ultimately see them handing over territory that they currently control. They're under tremendous military pressure on the front line. So if, I guess, failure to agree alone last night would have been extremely demoralizing for the Ukrainian government. But I think they would have preferred if the Russian loans had been used much more overtly in this whole arrangement.
Tony, outside the summit, farmers were protesting over Mercosur. Voting on that deal is delayed now. France and Italy are looking for assurances. Are the protests having an impact?
I mean, I don't think there's a explicit link between the protests yesterday outside the European Parliament will have, having that particular impact. That clearly, France and other countries, including Ireland, have long had reservations about the impact of the Mercosur agreement on the farming sector, the agri-food sector in the European Union in member states. And Italy, somewhat at the last minute, expressed its own reservations. So essentially what's going to happen now is that Italy and France will seek further safeguards for their agri-food sectors, and the deal is then expected to be signed in the middle of January. If Italy is assuaged and reassured by some extra safeguards, then that would mean there should be a weighted majority in favour of the Mercosur agreement. So it looks like it will be signed in Brazil in the middle of January. But obviously in Italy and elsewhere, business organisations, exporters that are not agri-food based, are furious that this has been delayed. They say that farmers once again have managed to trump the considerations, the economic considerations, at the expense of other sectors. Farmers, of course, would argue otherwise.
Europe editor Tony Connolly, thanks for joining us this morning. It's now 7:24.